You're listening to a Comics XF podcast. X-Men. Get it!
Good talk, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Battle of the Atom. This is your weekly X-Men podcast where we rank every story from A to Z.
I'm Adam.
And I'm the bad boy of X-Men podcasting. It's Zach. Hey, Adam.
Hey, hey.
How's my fellow nasty boy today?
Yeah, I've loved that we're going to use that. That's good. That's good.
I'm good. As long as I remember.
Yeah, I'm good. I can't say I'm like the most excited to talk about these stories tonight, but that I feel like that's baked right into the theme of like what it is that we're doing on today's show.
Yeah, because we're talking. Wait, why aren't you excited, Adam? I almost wore my Nightcrawler shirt today.
Oh, yeah. Well, normally
I'm so excited.
I'm very excited about Nightcrawler, but I'm not so sure about these stories that we have chosen today. But
I don't know why you're not sure. Like, Anna, our friend, Anna Papard,
yeah.
Dr. Anna Papard of the late, great Oh Gosh, Oh Golly, Oh Wow podcast.
Yeah.
Anna loves Nightcrawler. Why didn't we invite Anna?
That's a good point. You know, we could probably use some Nightcrawler backup from a Nightcrawlerologist. So
why don't we just call her?
I was going to say,
Do you have her number?
So, of course I have her number. Let's call her up. It's ringing. Oh, I don't know. She's not picking up. Let's see.
Hello. You've reached the voicemail of Dr. Anna F. Papard, PhD, editor of the award-winning book Super Sex and certified Nightcrawlerologist in the field of advanced vamping. Please leave me a message after the tone, and I'll get back to you faster than Mr. Wagner on a mean lady mercenary. And if this is the Boda Boys calling, after perusing the syllabus for this week's episode, I decided I'd rather be doing literally anything else. Bye.
Oh, man.
You might want to hang out. So, okay. So this... folks...
I guess she turned us down. She must have seen what we're reading this week.
So, folks, we are doing a Nightcrawler episode. And very specifically, we're doing a Nightcrawler episode where Nightcrawler is not what you want him to be.
That's right.
That was our idea. Was we're going to do Nightcrawler, but not what you want him to be.
No, but this did come from a Patreon request, right?
Well, Zach? One of these came from the Patreon.
Yes.
Patreon, and that is from Cade Runyon. Cade went over to patreon.com/battle. of the Atom, reached mm-hmm. deep down into his arts and pocketbooks and tossed a couple of coins into our coffers. And if you want to be like Cade and give us a suggestion that you might be excited about,
mm-hmm.
you might be excited about it, but we're not, which I'm sorry, Cade, there's just conflicted feelings that will come up during this episode. Then we're just going to go like whole hog into this and just do some weird stuff. Where Nightcrawler is just not what you want him to be, because I feel like at the end of the day, that's kind of where I've landed on the soon to be fallen Krakoan era of Nightcrawler. It's just not what I wanted him to be.
It wasn't his time. It wasn't, and we'll get into it. I before we start talking about stories though, Zach, I do have to ask. I did enjoy the most recent iteration of Nightcrawler on X-Men 97. What was your take on episode whatever that was of with Kurt in it?
Oh, my actual take is that it was cowardly not to also kill off Nightcrawler.
Oh, wow.
I love Nightcrawler. Y'all know I love Nightcrawler. I was like, oh, they're going to kill off Nightcrawler so that everyone feels bad. That makes sense because he's automatically the nicest. Anyway, I thought in general that was a very well done episode, despite me going in incredibly cynical mm-hmm. about it. I also believe that it's going to be Days of Future Pasted harder than anything's ever been Days of Future Pasted. But, like, here's what it is, Adam. It's just, if I had a nickel for every time a resurrection slash adaptation slash inspiration from the 1992 X-Men cartoon did a, how do you want to, an adaptation of E is for Extinction and gave Gambit far and away the best line, then yeah. I'd have two nickels, which you isn't would. A lot. It's weird that it happened twice.
Yeah, it's okay. We don't want that to be happening every day.
I mean, and not you with Gambit.
Yeah.
Oh, imagine if that's how we went out. Instead be of being like, remember this shit. But in not you, it Gambit. That would have made it better, actually.
I think so. But I did like that iteration. It reminded me of how, why we like this character, that, you know, he's supposed to be fun and bubbly and sexy and, you know, just full of life and energy. And there are some stories here that are making some attempts at that, but I think we should get
into it. We're talking about Nightcrawler now. We've switched back to Nightcrawler. Yes. Sorry.
Yes.
Was confused. So I assumed our listeners were also.
Oh no, I was not talking about Gambit.
Gambit and Nightcrawler are not all that dissimilar.
No, I was going to say,
they should hang out more. They've not hung out that much.
Wasn't there that issue where Wolverine came down to the cabin and like the two of them were drinking beer or something? I don't remember. That was like a quick scene in one of those.
Him and we read. Colossus came down to the cabin on Christmas because a ghost told him to. And Wolverine, Nightcrawler, and Gambit were all drinking
beers.
That's right. Beers.
Okay, I got it. I got the order wrong. All right, so why don't we get into it? What is our first story that we are going to be covering this week?
This was our Patreon request. It's one of the most recent things we've covered.
Yeah.
In fact, definitely the most recent, to the point of we actually punted this episode at one point because I was like, this isn't on Unlimited yet. I'm not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
I am not digging through my review copy folder to find the PDFs of this. We will wait a few weeks. And that's Uncanny Spider-Man 1-5 with a kicker of X-Men Blue Origins number 1. This is written by Cy Spurrier. Uncanny Spider-Man has art by Lee Gabbert, and X-Men Blue Origins has art by Wilton Santos and Marcus Toe.
Yeah, and Origins, we'll get into Origins, but it serves kind of as the issue. It's like 4.5. So you really do have to read it in between 4 and 5 to understand the last issue of Uncanny Spider-Man.
I'm going to say, that's a weird thing that happened in all 3 iterations of Cy Spurrier's Krakoa books.
That's where there true. Was like,
and also, here's this extra issue you got to read, and it's otherwise feels unrelated.
Yeah, so Uncanny Spider-Man just wrapped up this past February. I think the last issue has a cover date of February 2024, but I guess I'm looking, the release date was December. So, you know, we've got a couple months on this. I just want to start by saying that we sort of insinuated this before, but I am not a fan at all of what Cy Spurrier did during Krakoa in general. But I think the biggest miss, the biggest whiff, is that Jonathan Hickman sent him a perfectly calculated pitch to knock a story out of the ballpark with Nightcrawler in this era. And I don't know what the heck Cy thinks this character is, but he spent years writing stories about Kurt that really just didn't hit the mark, like completely missed what Nightcrawler is all about and why we enjoy him and the kind of stories we want to tell. So when we get to Uncanny Spider-Man, it's an interesting time for the books because this is Fall of X. Everything is supposed to be apocalyptic and depressing and genocidal. And yet this is kind of Cy on his like apology tour, because now he's decided in this very last lap that he is going to try and make Nightcrawler the fun, sexy character that flirts and has a good time while the world is falling apart around him. And that, my friends, is a very interesting choice.
It is a choice. And I'm going to say, I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily criticize it as an apology tour or anything. I'll say, it kind of hits the mark on Nightcrawler, just like characterization-wise. I have a few things with the overall concept that I don't love. But in general, like, his Nightcrawler's fun in this. Like, he's enjoyable to hang out with. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, and it's kind of infuriating at the same time, because reading this book, you're looking back at everything that he did from Way of X forward and wondering, where was this character? Like, it shows that Psy does understand Nightcrawler to a certain aspect, and yet just let all of the ideas around Krakoa that he wanted to give out, some of which I think are patently offensive, just really overwhelm the storytelling that got away from what this character was supposed to be. And so now, you know, you have this story where basically to be Nightcrawler at the end of the day, he's got to dress up like Spider-Man.
Okay. And so this is the part. Now, on one hand, Kurt's having a crisis of faith. This has happened before. It's happened more than once. I get that he would feel disillusioned after he, and checking notes on this, yes, got turned into a weird demon monster that killed multiple high-level government officials in assassinations.
Yep.
By his mother, Margali Sardosh, who... what's this note here? Turned him over to Orcus, the genocide people?
Does appear that way. Yes.
That's not the arc we're talking about.
No.
I got more than two problems. Those are all in the past. If someone wants to submit those, I'll be annoyed. He does now have a hope sword, which isn't getting over. It's never getting over.
Also being, I don't know if haunted is the right word, but he has kind of a ghost Bamf on board who I think sharp-eyed readers will recognize almost immediately, because it's Cy Spurrier, that it's Legion. You know, spoiler alert.
So the ghost Bamf doesn't work. No. However, I imagine that the idea was that we have to keep Legion present in the story because he's going to have a role to play that got kicked out when they seemingly sped up the ending of Krakoa.
Does seem that way. Yes. Now, this is also, yeah, go ahead.
We haven't mentioned, like, Kurt's pretending to be Spider-Man here. That's what his crisis of faith is doing. Mm-hmm. He wants to get away from, like, he's away from Krakoa and all that. And it's like, I don't know how to help mutants. I guess I'm just going to help the common folk by being another Spider-Man. And this feels like cynical, cash grabby marketing stuff to me in a way that is really distasteful. Like, just like, I get annoyed about it. Like, okay, but we all know he's not Spider-Man. And why can't you just be like, hey, this is Nightcrawler, your friend. This is his book.
Yeah. And also Orcus, the villains of this book, are not really fooled by this for even a hot second.
Can we talk about the Orcus villains in this? Because they aren't Orcus villains. It's them leaning into this needs to be a Spider-Man book. So you have the Vulture.
Mm-hmm. Rhino.
Well, Rhino seems like his suit's being controlled by fascists.
Well, they all seem to be infected with phalanx by Orcus, so there is an element of that, but it is weird. Well,
in fact, Vulture infected himself, to be fair.
Yes, but you are absolutely right that it is odd that to keep the concept going, we need to have some Spider-Man villains that are turned into X-Men villains in a way, and it's, I don't know...
Spider-Man villains need to be one of two things. One, working class dudes just trying to get by in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or two,
crazy scientists.
Evil rich people. Venom is number one. Just to be clear, Venom's number one.
Yeah.
He's on that. Green Goblin is in number two. Uh-huh. Doc Ock is in number two. He's not rich, but he falls into
the rich. Crazy scientist. So, that part doesn't work. I will say the part that does work and does allow for Kurt to be flirty and fun is that the other antagonist in this book that quickly turns into an ally is Silver Sable. And that works for me. I do appreciate the fact that this is
a making that Silver Sable Black Cat movie.
I don't know. You got me, man. I can tell you. If Sony has a third tier, like a second or third tier Spider-Man character that's not Spider-Man, they're probably developing a movie about them, you know, in some fashion. I see you furiously Googling here.
But, I am. I want to see if the Silver Sable Black Cat movie is still going on. Why apparently not? They're still doing a Kraven movie. So who knows?
Maybe they can afford some costumes for them this time, you know, instead of just having them drive around in an ambulance. I will
Silver and Black. Wait. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was not canned. It was not going to be a movie. But Sony was interested in developing the project as a television show. So who knows?
Oh, okay. Wow. Great. So I think we've kind of outlined the pros and cons of the actual series, but the real centerpiece of this is not Uncanny Spider-Man. It is that fourth and a half issue that came along as a standalone one shot, which is X-Men Blue Origins, which allows Psy to retcon the Draco essentially and tell, not fully retcon the Draco, but retell Nightcrawler's origin in a way that does feel more aligned with what fans would want, what maybe Claremont would have wanted, and essentially sets up Mystique and Destiny as Kurt's actual parents.
Which is, listen, I'm going to compliment sandwich this one.
Please.
One, love the concept. It's great. No complaints about that.
No.
I think fabulous. As a certified the Draco hater, was very funny to have this happen and then immediately see Azazel get murdered in a different book. Like, you're no longer relevant to anything, Azazel. No one's copping for Azazel.
Hey, Zach, well, did you catch Azazel in the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer?
I'm just going to be clear for anyone on this podcast listening. I walked out of watching that trailer because, of course, I was. And I told my wife, I feel nothing. I feel nothing for it, except
the 17th F-bomb didn't do it for you.
The one thing I do feel is that, Yellow spandex was a bad idea.
Oh, yeah. It's an interesting shape.
That looks, it looks terrible. It looks absolutely awful.
All right.
Regardless,
that was more of an Azazel update than anything else. I just thought that was funny.
It's killing me that Azazel is in movies again. That shouldn't happen. He was fun in X-Men First Class. That's the best Azazel's ever been, but still. Yeah.
You were saying.
So, love that. There's two things that bother me a bit. One of them is annoying fan thing. One of them is like actual art criticism thing.
Okay.
From a criticism standpoint, I feel like this is less of a story and more of an extended retcon in comic book form, which, like, it's all exposition.
Yes.
To say, and we're fixing this now. Yeah. And I like that they fixed it. I like that this is the new normal. I wouldn't say it's necessarily an enjoyable or entertaining read outside of that. This is not a standalone story in the way that X-Men Unlimited number 4 that first laid out Mystique yeeting Nightcrawler off of a cliff. It's not a standalone story like that. The second thing is I personally have a weird fan thing about, oh, actually Mystique and Destiny are great, perfect parents who really loved their kids instead of like, hey, it's complicated.
Right. Yeah.
And what? You're going to tell me that, well, actually she still hates Graydon Creed. We all hate Graydon Creed. That's not unique.
I don't have an issue with the retcon. I actually think it matches the status quo of the characters that they were trying to tell as part of the Krakoan era.
Yes, it does.
My issue does have much more to do with A, slotting this in as sort of like an in-between standalone issue that is squeezed into this mini that I don't
It's smashing. Like, this is obviously the idea they wanted to tell with the mini. And they said, well, let's tie all this Spider-Man crap to it to make it work. And you know what? It could have just been Silver Sable got a contract with Orcus and was hunting regular Nightcrawler. It didn't. Yeah. You didn't have to put the Spider-Man accoutrement on it. That's a hat on a hat. You didn't need that. Continue.
Yeah. But at the time, I think a lot of people were confused when I tweeted out that I did not think that Cy Spurrier should be the person to be writing this particular one shot. And I think that to write this story, which is a pretty landmark, you know, queer story, to have it come from this writer that has really done some just really distasteful things in his books over the course of the Krakoan era. It just didn't sit right with me. What I appreciated was that if you look at the credits page, it does say that Sy did reach out to a variety of colleagues to help work with him on this book. But it's not to say that queer stories can only be told by queer creators, but in this particular case, with these particular characters, it just didn't sit right with me that he was the person telling this particular story. That speaks a lot to just my personal distaste for what this writer did in this era than anything else.
My kind of view on that, just honestly, is that this is corporate comics. At a certain point, it's either going to get told or not. And like, Sy was the guy who could get this across the finish line.
Yes.
At the time.
Yep.
And you know what? They went ahead and did it to lay a groundwork that other people could do more with these stories later. I get that at a certain point your hands are tied and you're like, well, this is what we're doing. And could it be done better? Yes. But I don't think there was anything too off about the story he was telling. There's a few beats in there that don't like land perfect, but I think more of those are functional of we have a short amount of time and there's only two characters here, so every character has to be like the sounding board and the opposite of the other, even if it doesn't always make sense.
Yeah.
Regardless.
I want to be clear, Uncanny Spider-Man and this one shot are definitely the best things that Spurrier writes over the course of the last couple of years.
Best things he's written since X-Force.
Right.
Yeah. Like
for Marvel.
Which again, I
didn't read his Hellblazer.
I didn't read his Hellblazer. I'm just not a big Hellblazer guy, which seems like I would be.
I
bet I would love Hellblazer. I just haven't read it yet. I've been reading too much Chainsaw Man. I don't know if you know this, Adam. Yeah. There's a man with chainsaws.
I've heard of it. Yeah, lots of chainsaws.
You would, Adam.
Yeah.
It's sicko mode. You would love it. It's pure sicko mode all the time.
Everything I've heard about it sounds great. So maybe at some point. But
pure sicko mode.
I wonder how much of my reaction to, hey, this is actually good, comes from in comparison to what he was doing and just being grateful that it wasn't more of that, you know?
I wanted to wait a few months.
Yeah.
Because now that I've read it again, I'm like, okay, actually, no, there's a lot of good in this one.
Yeah.
I like this one a lot.
There is.
I like
there
it is. Way more than I liked Way of X or Legions of X.
Yeah. Didn't like either of those for a variety of reasons, but we're not reviewing those today. And
we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
I gotta remember.
I don't want to right now.
I also want to say, I think the art is pretty good throughout this. And even though we switch artists and art teams on X-Men Origins, I think that there's a consistency to the visual language. It looks pretty good. You know, these books look nice. I think
Gabbert's great.
Gabbert does a really nice job. Very much able to capture Nightcrawler's joy and you know, there's chemistry between Nightcrawler and Silver Sable that works because of the artwork and not just the writing. So, all right. I think we've talked a lot about this and I think we've kind of,
it's pretty okay.
Yeah. So why don't we try ranking it on our big old list, Zach?
That's the thing, Adam. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Oh my gosh.
We're on the road again.
Yeah.
On the road to what? Can't wait to get back out on that road again. We're on the road to 1,000.
1,000? Yeah, we did hit 900 last week, folks, if you missed it.
We're ranking every X-Men story from best to worst. The best being the House of X, the Powers of 10. The 300th best being Marvel Knights X-Men. The 600th best being Deadpool's Got Bad Blood. And 900 is 2099 World Tomorrow.
Where do you think this falls?
I think this is better than Marvel Knights X-Men at 300.
I do too.
Like, this is getting steadily into the, it's pretty good range.
Yeah, I think
we're in the... pretty good by X-Men standards.
I think we're in the bottom half of the 200s, probably, you know?
Let's see. Is it better than Nightcrawler's Inferno at 254?
No.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's not better than Madripoor Nights at 272.
Yeah, but Madripoor Nights is,
I know, it's grossly way too
low on this list.
Way too low.
What last were week, we thinking? Were we just week, cynical that day? Were we just mad at something?
No.
And it wasn't Jim Lee's fault.
No, here's why that happened. I just think of where it was. It's just gotten pushed down the list. I think that's what it is. But anyway,
How is it under the Bishop miniseries?
Yeah, we'll correct that at some point.
Someday. This is, I would say,
good this place. This is
better than X-Men Endangered Species at 276.
I would agree, but I don't think it has the same all-ages fun power. I realize we're talking about two very different things here. Do you think it's better than these two Power Pack specials? X-Men Power Pack, Wolverine Power Pack?
No. I'm going to say no, because those have Gear Hero.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just put it at the new 276.
I think that's a good place for it. I mean, if we were just doing Origins by itself, I might bump it up.
Origins by itself would pop up higher. I'll say this. I never want to see Nightcrawler and Silver Sable, like, in a relationship again. They need to be people that are like, man, that was fun.
Yeah. That's what's great about, you know, Nightcrawler is that, you know, he can have fun open relationships on a regular basis with a variety of people.
Or he can get married and then have his wife eaten in front of him and then vow revenge on literally everyone in the world.
Wow, Zach, that sounds like a completely different timeline. What could you be talking about?
I'm talking about a 616 comic, baby. I'm talking about Uncanny X-Force 24. It's called Frozen Moment. This is by Rick Remender with pencils by Phil Noto. It's right after the Otherworld arc.
Yep. Yep.
And there's two storylines.
Yeah. So we're getting the follow-up of the Otherworld stuff, which, involves burying Jamie, who died.
And Brian just being really mad about Rick Remender's Brian is so weird to me, like, to the point where I have kind of wanted to start reading Secret Avengers to be like, and what was he actually up to at this point? Because it seems hypocritical on the surface.
He's very, very jealous of Phantom X and Betsy. It's creepy.
By the way, Phantom X and Betsy hook up in this, and I think it works. Given their entire story up to here, I think that works.
I would never...
I like Betsy's new girlfriend, but...
Yeah, I would never say that Remender's talents are really in the romance angle, but I never questioned this relationship. I thought it worked at the time. So, but the main story here involves Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler, who is now in the 616.
Who's been on the team for a little while and hasn't done anything.
No, he's just basically another version of Kurt, just kind of sitting around being grumpy. And in this issue, he has a vendetta that he needs to complete. So who is it that he needs to seek revenge on, Zach?
It's Bob Drake. It's Iceman. If you remember back in, I think one of our, this is like a first six episode when we did Uncanny X-Force Dark Angel Saga. Anyway, Iceman betrayed the Age of Apocalypse people, and he did a what's his name from The Matrix? Who's the guy that betrayed him because he was like, this steak tastes like steak to me? Joe Pesci?
Not Joe Pesci. What? It's Joey Pantalone.
Joey Pantalone.
Joey Pants. Yeah. Oh, what was Joey Pants' name in The Matrix though? Why am I?
Yeah, what's his Matrix name? What's his fun Matrix
name? Okay, I gotta look this up. Switch. Joey.
What's Joey Pants' fun Matrix name?
Hold on. I'm sorry.
This
is going to bother me. Cypher. How many listeners are screaming at their like car radio right now or their headphones? They're like, it's Cypher, you morons.
Guys, I haven't watched The Matrix in like 2 years. The last I checked, pretty good still.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
Last time I watched The Matrix, I was like, oh, shoot, I'm watching The Matrix. This is awesome. This is all I want in life.
1999 was a heck of a year for movies.
I was 8 years old. It was my first R-rated movie. It was a good time.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
That's a good first R-rated movie, too, actually. Like,
yeah. Way to start off with a bang. Not only is
it
good,
it's also like, it's a soft R. Like, I bet the Matrix could easily be PG-13 these days. Like, I don't remember how much language is in it.
Isn't the Matrix PG-13?
No, it's R.
Oh, it is rated R. Yeah. Okay.
To be fair, they dress up in Columbine jackets and kill a lot of people.
They sure do. And you know what's also wild is watching Blade and seeing Blade came out the year before The Matrix. I definitely recommend anybody to do a double feature of watching Blade before The Matrix and see the similarities. It's crazy how many things are
people
in
need to watch Blade, watch The Matrix, watch X-Men 2000 and be like, oh, I see what they were doing there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's all right. So anyway.
Okay. That's what action movies were.
Yeah. Okay. So, Nightcrawler wants to kill AOA Iceman. AOA Iceman is way more powerful than 616 Iceman was at this point in continuity.
Yeah.
He's like got armies of Icemen. He's got power to be a giant. Like, he's just a crazed killer. He's also like a ladies' man, I guess, or he's hiring lots of escorts. And this is weird within the context of the character.
Is it? Because this is an Iceman that is, in general, overcompensating.
It does seem that way, yes.
This is an Iceman who's like, no, I want pleasure and I don't want to deal with any of this stuff. Like, I can buy it both ways on this one. Also, in 2012, Iceman was straight. So,
yes. Like, yes. He orders up a redhead as part of this harem that he's collecting here. And it turns out to be Deadpool in a wig, who then says something racist and tries to shoot him in the face.
Is it racist? I forgot. Like,
yeah, he does use a line from Full Metal Jacket that has been oft repeated to really ill effect against Vietnamese women. So anyway,
that's an interesting choice
for Rick to use that. But in this case, he's too slow. Deadpool's too slow. He cannot shoot Bobby in time because he had to make the quip. So we get a couple of attempts on his life, and then we figure out that there is an easy way to kill this Iceman, apparently. It's to shove him in a furnace.
It's a furnace with no humidity, so all the water's going away, blah, blah, blah. And Nightcrawler just stone cold kills him.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if the theme of this episode is it's not the Nightcrawler you'd want him to be. Anyway, Nightcrawler doesn't have the same morals that our lovely Kurt Wagner does here in the 616, does he?
He's also just not like, I don't like AOA Nightcrawler. No, you weren't on the episode where we covered Excalibur with, it was me and Connor Goldsmith. And there was a mean lady. So Connor liked that book. I made that joke to Connor's face and I've done it more than once. So we're good on it, but
that's fine. That tracks. I don't think he'd be angry about that, but, yeah,
Connor loves a mean lady.
AOA Nightcrawler, not fun, not fun. Just, you know.
He does. Here's the thing, though. Like, and this is what Remender is trying to get at. You know that part of your brain that loves dumb action movies where the hero gets revenge?
Yeah.
This is a dumb action movie where the hero gets revenge, and Phil Noto does draw the heck out of it.
Compliments to Phil. I think this issue looks outstanding. Who's doing colors on this book at this point? This is Dean White. Yeah. And Dean is doing the same, you know, color palette that he brought to Jerome Pena. And I just think it really looks great. Noto's inking himself here. Just fantastic. Looks good throughout the entire thing. So yeah, I mean, is it a dumb kind of action movie? Like Wolverine falls on a plasma grenade or something like that, and just turns into a piece of steak to protect everybody on the street. And like, there's these fun action beats to this story. I just can't get behind, like, there's no whimsy to Nightcrawler here. He's just like, yeah, we gotta kill him. Gotta kill him.
Okay, but Uncanny X-Force was not a book about whimsy.
No, which of course not.
Part of why it was wild they went to Otherworld.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not the Kurt that we're used to or that we would want, you know? It's the perfect Kurt for this book at this time.
Honestly, I even disagree with that just because I don't think this book needed a Kurt. I think they were running out of characters when they killed off Angel, and then they were like, well, we need to replace him with someone, but then they never gave Kurt anything to do except for this, and then the equivalent of doing this with Blob later, but putting a shark in his belly.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, forgot about that. Well,
that's all Remender, Kurt does.
Yeah, I mean, I got the impression that Remender wanted to play around in the AOA universe, and then maybe just pulled Kurt back and was like, I have to write this character now. Okay.
Well, Kurt was, you have to remember, Kurt was dead at the time.
Right.
Bastion had a hand through him.
Mm-hmm.
So So they were like, we need a Kurt.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So,
this is fine. I think
it's fine.
Terrible.
Is it better or worse than Uncanny Spider-Man?
I think it works as a whole better than Uncanny Spider-Man does. Because I do think like the Phantom X and Betsy stuff.
That works.
Pretty well works like as a counterpoint to all this. Like, it's like, here's our heart, and then here's the stupid part of it. And right. They're going in parallel. And I think it works better. I don't know how much better it works, but it works better. Like,
I don't think I would put this ahead of the Burning Man issue of X-Force at 249.
Probably not. It's probably exactly as good as the Power Pack issue where they have Thanksgiving.
Well, it's interesting because isn't Amazing Spider-Man 92 is right above that at 251. Is that the Iceman issue?
That's the Iceman one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a better issue, though, because that has the great J. Jonah Jameson stuff in it, doesn't it?
That does. It does just have that good J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, yeah. But let's see.
I think this is better than Paper Not Paper by Innocenti.
Okay. A lot of great symbolism, but it's a very short story. So this could be our new 253?
This is our new 253.
All right. And we have one more Nightcrawler that isn't quite what you might expect, Zach. Which Nightcrawler?
He's not what you want
this?
Him to be.
Yeah.
Oh, this is Adam. You've heard of the movie X2 X-Men United, correct?
I have. Yes.
And we can all admit, no matter what our feelings are on that film, which mine are generally positive, though I haven't watched it in probably a decade.
Remember it being pretty good.
Hey, you know what? The movie, the X-Men movie that came out when I was 12, I've got a lot of strong feelings for. That are hard to overlook.
Right.
The Nightcrawler scene, the opening scene with the president.
Uh-huh.
Freaking rips. That's an action scene that folks still can't do better than.
Well, they were making X-Men, you know, movie adaptations, but also these sort of tie-in comics to both the first movie and now the second one. And that's what we're going to talk about here. This is X-Men 2, the prequel, Nightcrawler. This is a one-shot.
If you read the cover, it's official movie comic book prequel X-Men 2, Nightcrawler.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. Now, this is...
It says on the Marvel Wikia, cover artist not listed. And it's just a picture.
Yeah, it's a photo.
It's a promotional still.
Yeah, it's a promotional still.
Alan Cummings.
Yep. So I had never read this. I was delighted to see who our writer was on this. So Zach,
Adam,
the pleasure.
It's 2003, baby. You got a Nightcrawler story that you got to tell. You hear that coming down the highway? Oh, buddy, it's Chuck the Truck.
Chuckles the Truckles. Chuck Austin.
We got Chuck Austin, buddy. Were that you expecting right. Chuck Austin today?
I probably was.
We said it was Nightcrawlers we don't care about.
Yeah, I was not. And this is penciled and inked by Carl Kershaw. And Zach, I'm going to say something crazy here. And that is
listening.
That of the Nightcrawlers that we're getting today, I honestly think this isn't that far out of the realm. Like, there are weird things going on in this book. Very weird things that I actually don't think line up very well at all with the movie.
That's X2. The problem. This Nightcrawler isn't what I want from movie Nightcrawler, but go on.
No, like I opened this book expecting Alan Cumming Nightcrawler, and that was not what I got. I got a version of like classic
regular Claremont Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler. It's not quite him. I don't think Chuck Austin quite gets it. But I think the liberties that he takes with Kurt's origin story, the worst part of it isn't Kurt. It's the weirdness that he brings to Amanda Sefton and Margolis Ardos. Like, that's the weird part of this book.
That's a weird thing, because it's like, is incest okay? We don't know. He's kind of like your brother, but he's kind of not. But then there's not incest, and Margolia and Amanda are both a little bit racist in their own way.
Yes.
Which is not uninteresting. I don't know if it's interesting, but like I get what Chuck's trying to do here. Be like, hey, look, Margolia, you also dressed him up like a devil and had everyone like that was kind of weird, wasn't it?
Well, we should probably tell listeners what this is if they've never encountered it before. So this is supposed to happen before the attack on the president. So we've got to get Nightcrawler from wherever he was before to the assassin that's being, like, you know, controlled by William Stryker.
Weapon 12.
Yes, at the beginning of X2. So this is basically Kurt starting off at Margolis' traveling circus.
It's Weapon X2. Oh my gosh. Screw you, Justin. Screw you. I just got that.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The traveling circus is not in any where in Europe. It's in Canada. And Kurt is there. He's doing his acrobatic routine with Amanda. And there's this weird thing where, like, there's all these other gymnasts that are dressed up like angels or something, and
they're doing an angels and demons thing.
Yeah,
it's Charlie
yeah.
Truck. He's doing an angels and demons thing.
Yeah, that's his deal. William Stryker uses
not just to be clear, William Stryker, aka Brian Cox, in a spitting image of Brian Cox.
Gotta say, Carl Kerschel does a pretty good Brian Cox drawing. It looks like him. I mean, Nightcrawler doesn't look like anything like Alan Cumming, but, you know, he gets.
Do you know what Nightcrawler doesn't have that makes me mad?
What's that?
He doesn't have his angel scars.
No.
One for every sin.
It doesn't look anything like the movie character.
It's just movie Nightcrawler has a look, and it's not better than Dave Cockrum Nightcrawler. But, like, if I'm signing up to read movie Nightcrawler, give me movie Nightcrawler.
Yeah. This ain't it. So Stryker uses another mutant's powers to mentally convince Kurt that Amanda has fallen in love with him and wants to run away with him. Stryker then imprisons him, tortures him, and then eventually sicks him on the president. He teaches him to be a killer and sicks him on the president. And that's how it ends. In the meantime, we're getting all of this stuff with Margolis and Amanda back at the circus, where Amanda doesn't want to be with Kurt. She wants to be with, like, some other hunk that's there. And Margolis basically like, hey, how come you're not hooking up with your brother? And, like, Amanda's like, you want me to hook up with my brother? You're a racist. You, like, treat him like he's a freak. And she's like, no. Look, that's just my cute little nickname for him. And it's just
he's
weird.
My little night crawler. Because he crawled around when he was a baby. And I'm like, Margolis.
Yeah, it's really silly. They're both dressed in, like, the most plain of plain clothes to establish that this is a movie. You know, it's like so silly.
Kurt, however, is wearing Dave Cockrum clothes for most of this.
He is wearing the classic costume to start the story, which you would never have seen in one of the Bryan Singer movies. And by the time he gets to Stryker, I guess they're going to refit him with the overcoat. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, the point of the overcoat was it was a coat he was wearing.
Yeah.
It's just he owned it.
Yeah. He doesn't have a coat in this story, though. I don't know where he got that coat.
He got it when he was pretending to be a guy on a White House tour, I think.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm not gonna try and understand the logic between X2, X-Men United in this comic book.
No, me neither. But I gotta say, I was anticipating just being like, ugh, what is this? Like, movie tie-in. But I thought Austin actually did an okay job, like, just giving it a shot. Like, if you were trying to learn about Nightcrawler because you saw X2, this actually gives you a better sense of who the character is than the movie does.
It gives you the sense of the comic character. Now, what I'm trying to figure out is, did they just not let, like, Chuck Austin read the movie script?
I gotta wonder. I mean, it's weird, right? Because you do have the Brian Cox, you know, image, but it's not, I just don't know. It doesn't link up very well. You know, like, well, he convinces Nightcrawler to kill his torturer, right? This guy who's been really at him and going after him about praying and, like, beating him up. And so, you know, he does kill one guy. And then immediately the last page is Brian's like, time to pay a visit to the president. It's like, okay, Brian, don't you think there's some steps in between? We still need to brainwash this guy a little bit more, don't we?
It's weird, man. Like, this is a weird comic. And it's weirder when you try and make sense of the X-Men movie timeline, which I'll tell you, once someone at work, and this was at least 7 or 8 years ago because it was at a previous job, but someone at my adult business job asked me to explain the X-Men movie continuity to them.
Oh, God.
Oh, I had a timeline and I had arrows going back and forth. And I was like, here's okay. Here and here's here. And this is where it splits off. And they're like, Zach, why do you know this? I'm like, I'm cursed with beautiful, beautiful knowledge.
I'm picturing like the scene out of A Beautiful Mind with you like drawing with, you know, just on my windows. My
desk. Yeah. Like, so here, and then here's where Deadpool plays in. We don't really know about this one. I don't care that much.
Oh, I love this so much for you. But yeah,
I've now stopped telling people that I know about X-Men.
I do have to wonder, though, like, what purpose a book like this really serves, though, because it's trying to connect the dots between the Nightcrawler origin stuff from the Uncanny Annual all the way to the beginning of X2. And that's not a straight line that you can actually draw very easily. Because those two universes just don't line up.
The purpose is money, buddy.
Yeah.
The purpose is these movies were huge. Yep. People were like, I don't know, those are just kind of hokey. You don't understand. Those were huge movies when they came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was like...
It was like X-Men and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. They were big to the point where they were like, let's try a Hulk movie. That one's bad. Let's try a Daredevil movie. That one's bad. Are we going to do multiple Ghost Riders? You bet we are.
I have a soft spot for those. At least the first one. Oh my goodness.
Have you watched the second one?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's bad, but
it's done by the Crank guys, isn't it? Isn't it the guys who do Crank?
And you have to understand that same level of stupid and with the co-star being Idris Elba means that I'm like, okay, I'm in.
It's terrible, but it
has Ghost Rider pees fire in that one.
Wow.
He also gets like a big construction piece of equipment and Ghost Riders it. And buddy, I'm a sucker for Ghost Riding things.
It has its moments. Okay, so why don't we try and rank this? I think that it's a real mixed bag. It was much better than I thought it was going to be, but it's still not very good.
Is the only movie thing we have the Wizards of the Coast card game tie-in comic. It's better than that.
I do think it's better than that. That's probably where in like the 700s or 800s.
That's low on the list.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't terrible, but it's also not good. I'm scrolling down and what's it 600 right now? Marvel. Wait. No. Yeah, this is definitely worse than the last three issues of New Mutants at 600.
I mean, yeah, this isn't good. That's the thing. It's just like, you're not expecting, if I showed you this on paper, you're not expecting it to be as not bad as it is.
Yeah. Like, I would rather read at 704, the Cyberforce X-Men crossover, honestly.
Okay, but would you rather read Magneto War at 705?
No, I don't think I would. And just for our listeners, the X-Men movie special from Wizards of the Coast that we just talked about is at 711. So... is this going to be our new 705?
Yeah, let's make it 705.
All right, great.
That's the right spot for it. Do you know what I'm not happy about in this one?
What's that?
Chuck doesn't give Nightcrawler his best piece of anatomy.
What do you mean? Which piece?
Two
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That he says on some special feature commentary on one of the DVDs. And that's where people are like, yeah, that's where it came from. Someone interviewed Chuck Austin on that. And he's like, you know what else he has two of?
Oh my God, Chuck, just stop. Wow.
The thing is, my copy of X2 on DVD doesn't have all the special features. It doesn't have the bonus disc. So I can't even find that and watch it at my own leisure.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry. Why is Chuck Austin
doing... you're
going to
have to buy up every DVD.
Why was Chuck Austin doing the audio commentary on X2?
No, it was just like, it was a featurette. They were doing like a Marvel Comics history bonus. Remember when DVDs also used to have multiple like 30-minute documentaries attached to them?
Yep. Well, you had to, right? Like, it was like, oh, you're going to spend $25 on this, so you need all the Easter eggs, right? There was always like that little pixel you had to touch to hear like a random interview with Elijah Wood from Lord of the Rings, and like,
Yes, nope, I also had all of the extended editions of Lord of the Rings. I know.
You knew all about it. All right, so we
you know how many times I've thought about the MTV Movie Awards featurette that was on Fellowship of the Ring, where they formed the Fellowship of the Ring, but I think it's Jack Black, and he gave himself a Prince Albert with the One Ring.
Good Lord, Jack Black.
Thought about that the other day.
Wow. Man, MTV Movie Awards. Yeah, I was thinking about the Ben Stiller is the stunt double for Tom Cruise on Mission Impossible 2 sketch from that years ago. That always gave me a laugh. Zach, we've done it. We've talked about three not quite the Nightcrawler we want stories, but we should thank our patron again.
Yeah, Cade, thank you so much. We had way more fun. Thank you for picking the best Siceburger Nightcrawler story.
Yes, and thank you.
Oof. Not one that we would be mad about.
Yeah.
It's just like,
we're not kept things positive, it. I thought. You know?
I thought we did a great positive job. But I don't think we meant, did we mention that the retcon is that Nightcrawler is Mystique Destiny's son?
Yes.
Or did I definitely we just said assume that. Everyone on the episode knew that?
I definitely said that. I'm pretty sure I said that.
We're nearly 350 episodes into this podcast. I assume that anyone who has any interest in us talking has like a base knowledge of what's going on in X-Men at a given time.
Sounds about right. I would hope so.
Like there's entry level X-Men podcasts that do a great job and make money by being approachable. And instead we've gone the opposite route.
That's right. As we always say, we are not a 101 class. You know, we are advanced.
We're either advanced or we're not so much a class as we are like two guys at the park yelling very loud.
And scaring the pigeons.
Dude, I would love to go and scare pigeons with you.
Thanks, buddy.
It would be great. What do you got going on, dude?
Let's see. If people missed it, I did team up with Anna to write about the last issue of Fall of X.
Fall of the House of X, a bad comic.
Fall of the House of X 4, which we didn't pull our punches this time. I definitely recommend reading the article if you want. We had a good time writing it. We talked a lot about the difference between baseball and softball. So if you missed that one, check it out. Folks can always follow me on socials, Adam Reck on Blue Sky and Instagram, and Arthur Stacey on Twitter. Zach, do we know what we're doing next week?
No, I gotta update the list.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I think the person who was Patreoning for next week has sent me something. I'm a little behind on email right now. Cool. I've had a busy time at work.
Hey, no problem.
And those are all in the same inbox, so I ignore the not work ones while I'm working, and then I don't want to look at my computer anymore.
All right, so next week's a mystery. That's cool. I like that.
You know, it's a mystery, but it's going to be a gift. A gift of what are we going to figure out? And that's more for the listeners. Adam, I promise you, I'll figure it out very soon so we can read.
I'm not concerned. I know we'll figure it out. It's going to be a good one.
We will. But until then, folks, this has been Battle of the Atom. We hope you survived the experience. Get it!